Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is the week before Christmas, the 20th of December. Was it 20 to 12? 20th of December. Santa has 5 days to get ready. Okay, 2022. I can't talk today. I can't read numbers. All right, what can I tell you? So I have someone here who, I have a guest today who can read numbers. That's Kirsten Baszler, who is a great friend of this show and a good friend. And I love having her on. She's the North Dakota Superintendent of Public Instruction for 12 years now, and that's an elected nonpartisan office. So she's been elected to all these terms, okay, as North Dakota Superintendent of Public Instruction. So she must be doing something right. I happen to tell you she is, okay? And she has just been elected President of the Council of Chief State School Officers, CCSSO. And I got to thank everybody over there, Carolyn, et cetera, for helping me put together today's show, as well as the folks, Dale and everybody down over in North Dakota, who also, because we had to reschedule a couple of times, and everybody was great about it. And I'm so glad we're doing this show today. So we got the President of the Council of Chief State School Officers and the Superintendent of Public Instruction in North Dakota, which happens to be the same person, Kirsten Baszler, and she's going to be on in just a second. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, and that, of course, is our home website, the American Consortium for Equity in Education, and we're proud of what we do over there. We had a great year. We're looking forward to another great year next year in 2023. Please go over. The show will be archived over there. All of our podcasts are there. Our magazine, Equity in Access, is over there. You'll love it. Just click on the cover. It's terrific. We have teacherretention.com, our website. That's about a big challenge out there, teacher retention. And we also have seltoday.org. We do a lot of stuff over there, so please go visit at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, and I can't tell you how happy I am to make this connection. Kirsten, are you there?
Yes. Good morning, Larry.
We did it.
We did it. Yes, and I am so happy we finally connected. As Larry said, it's been one or two kerfuffles, as they say in North Dakota, but here we are together. So happy to be with you this morning, Larry.
Thank you, Kirsten. It's wonderful to have you here. And congratulations. You know, I got to tell you something, and we've said this, you know, 12 years as the superintendent of public instruction, and that's elected by the people of North Dakota. Okay, so like I said, man, you got to be proud of yourself. You know, I'm just proud just to know you. You know, I think it's just great. Okay,
thanks. So congrats on that. Blessed. I feel very blessed and very honored to be able to have the people of North Dakota choose to have me lead their educational system for as long as they have. So I feel it's humbling, and I feel just so honored and blessed. It's an important job for 120,000 kids.
Yeah, it sure is. You're doing a great job at it. And now, in your spare time, you can be president of the Council of Chief State School Officers, okay? Congratulations on that, okay? CCSSO.org. Thank you, Carolyn, for helping me set up the show. But I got to ask you something. I think you told me this. We were on the phone a couple of weeks ago. Is there a special Christmas present coming right around Christmas, or has it been born yet? Am I right? What's going on?
Thank you. Thank you for asking. Yes, I was expecting my daughter-in-law and son were expecting my second grandchild, a baby girl, and she was born in the middle of a blizzard last week in North Dakota.
Of course.
She arrived on December 13th. So I suggested that they name her Elsa from Frozen, but my son daughter-in-law had other thoughts.
What's her name?
I have two granddaughters, and her name is Bindi. B-I-N-D-I, Bindi, and it's an Australian name, and I hadn't heard of it before, not very common in North Dakota, so we're kind of far away from Australia, so we're bringing a little bit of the down under up to North Dakota, I guess.
Well, you got to go visit. I've been there. It's a beautiful place. You got to take Bindi over there. I didn't know that name, but what a great name. I love it. That's terrific.
I do, too. It's actually a little bit of more history. I didn't know about it either. So Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, his daughter is Bindi Irwin. And so that's where they heard it. Yep. So.
There you go. Well, congratulations, my dear.
Pocket.
That's just wonderful. You're way too young to have three grandkids. I don't know what's going on here.
Two grandkids. Two girls. Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
And Australia is on my bucket list, and so I think you've just given me a reason to make that happen. Take my granddaughter down there.
You should go meet all the Bindis. meet all the binges.
Yeah, there you
I'm
go.
Telling you. You'll
there
love
you
it
go.
Out there. It's just great. The weather's a little different. And the blizzard, just a question. We had terrible weather here this past weekend. We lost power for 36 hours. How was the blizzard? And she was born that day, Kirsten? She was born that day?
Yeah, the blizzard started Monday, and she arrived Tuesday morning at about 11 a.m. And so the blizzard kind of hung over North Dakota. We had schools weren't in session Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. We leveraged some virtual learning options across the state. But, yeah, it shut us down. Every road in North Dakota was no travel advised or actually closed by a highway patrol. So, yeah.
Well, I know this week they're predicting some lousy weather again. I think so. Good luck with that. We're expecting another storm here on Friday. I don't know what's going to happen. We will
Santa
see.
Needs a
let's
lot
get
of for his play.
Yeah. Let's see what's going to happen on all this. Let's talk about this. This is great. You know, you took the job, and it's wonderful. They elected you Council of Chief State School Officers President, okay? And you wrote me that you made a speech about your priorities in office when you accepted that position. What are the priorities as President of CCSSO?
Absolutely. So, first, thanks to CCSSO. It's not as hard of a job as – I think because that team over there is just excellent. Carissa Miller and her team, just they top-notch shop, and so they'll make me look good. But truly, as anybody knows, when you take office or ask somebody to elect you as their leader or select you as their leader, they often ask them, so what's your platform? And every president has a platform. Every administration has a series of things in their platform. And so people were asking me that as I was serving as president-elect, and I really thought about it. And in my speech, as I was writing my speech at the conference, said, my platform is children, plain and simple, as simple as it gets. And the purpose, the reason we exist is school systems in this great country is to help our students succeed. So we are focused 100% on student outcomes. And to take that a little bit further to continue the work and use this presidency as a platform to do the work, it's student outcomes through better governance and focusing on school board governance, helping school boards understand the tremendous amount of responsibility and tremendous amount of power and influence that they have in making sure that students have those high student outcomes, academic outcomes that they deserve. And so working with our school boards in North Dakota, bringing that work to the national level to scale that across the nation, have other states engaged in this. But through school board governance, I'm convinced it's the only way that we are going to be able to get the outcomes in this nation that our students deserve and that our taxpayers, frankly, deserve for their investment in public education.
They really do. And you're from Mandan, right? Are you from Mandan?
I am.
Boy, do I have a good memory or what?
You have good memory. Right across the river from the capital city, a community called Mandan.
Yeah. And were you on the school board there? Were you involved?
I was. So I think I have this like, decade long pattern that's going on here. So, before I was elected as the state superintendent of schools, I served on the Mandan School Board for nearly a decade. And I served 7 of those years as president. And I think it was there that I really understood how important school boards were. I had been a teacher. I'd been a building principal. I'd been a district leader in our capital city, the largest school district in the state of North Dakota. But during that time, I was serving as a board member and eventually board president across the river in the school district. It's the fourth largest school district in the state, and it's the school that my sons were going to. And in that role is where I really understood how important good policy and good budgets, good funding, good use of funding, not necessarily always more funding. I think we got caught up in that. How good use of funding and good policy, how important that is to having our students succeed. School board members are important leaders in their school systems, and they hold the power to dramatically improve student achievement. So that's where I realized that. If there was a single role that I had experienced prior to being elected state superintendent that prepared me the best for this role, it was that role of school board president.
And you were a teacher, a superintendent, a principal, and still, or at least, were you superintendent in Fargo, or were you?
I was a building leader, and I worked in the district office in the district office of Bismarck, but never the superintendent.
Right, I kind of remembered that. Okay, the way you described it a minute ago, I just want to clear that up. But you have a great educational career, and I have to ask you this: most people. Okay, and they serve with good hearts. I don't misunderstand this next question. But most people, okay, who are on a school board are interested in school boards. Sometimes they're just interested in politics these days, but they're interested in the schools and education, okay?
Yes.
And but they're responsible for what's going to go into the schools and all that. You are unique in that you had that incredible education background, professional education background, okay? And you brought that over to Mandan.
Yes.
Okay, am I pronouncing that right? Is it Mandan?
That's
am I pronouncing it?
It's Mandan.
Is that right?
Yep, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay, good. So you brought that over there, but your colleagues on the school board, I don't know, probably didn't have that educational experience. I'm glad they tapped into you. But across the state and across the whole country, most people on school boards don't have an educational background, yet they're responsible. Okay, for doing so much for our public schools. That's the way it works, okay? How do you balance those two things? And just talk about how you're – and you know all this. I'm just kind of prefacing all this. You know this, okay? How do you see the state superintendents working with the school boards to help them along? It's hard.
That's such a great question, and it's a fantastic point. You're right. I had an educational background. I knew what assessment scores were supposed to look like. I knew how to read assessment scores. I knew what, you know, the terms were that our superintendent and his team were using. So the road to where we are today started 20 years ago when I was first elected as the school board president. And I looked at us as a board and I thought, you know what, we require our superintendents to engage in professional development. We require our teachers, our paraprofessionals. Heck, we even require our bus drivers and our food staff to engage in professional development and learning and training. And yet we, at the top of the hierarchy of schools, the board, the individuals on the board with the most influence and power to shape that district vision, we weren't requiring to learn and grow in our profession. And so I started a professional development program. And so once a month we would meet twice. So and it was just a time for us. I would buy pizza, and we'd meet an hour before the official board meeting would start, and we would just have an hour of professional development. We'd take that time to learn about data. What is an interim test? How are our interim tests? What does that even mean? What is the state test? We would just learn. We'd do book studies together. So I required that as a board president, and so just brought that philosophy along to the Capitol, along with me to the Capitol, and have started the North Dakota Be Legendary Institute training that we are now running. We're up and running. It began, the idea began right before COVID hit, and it was a blessing and a curse. It was a little bump in the timeline, but it provided the funding that was necessary to stand up this program for North Dakota Be Legendary Institute. And it's an amazing program. It is a two-day institute that helps do exactly what I did with my one school board. It brings boards together with their superintendent to learn about the impact of their role on good policy and good budget in impacting student outcomes. So the Be Legendary Institute helps our boards adopt student outcomes for their very specific school district based on their data. They are shown how to adopt progress measures for those goals. They are shown how to monitor those student outcome goals, and that really helps with separating what's the superintendent's job. You've hired that person. You need to hold them accountable. You don't need to do their job, but you do need to monitor the progress and keep them accountable for those student outcome goals that you as a board have set. And it shows them how to structure board meetings. That's the best tell of any indicator is that school board agenda. You take a look at that board agenda, that will tell you what your board's priorities are. But sadly, less than 10% of school board agendas across this nation spend time talking about. They're talking about colors of buses. They're talking about whether they should have chocolate milk on Friday and Monday or just Friday. They're talking about coaches. They're talking about everything else except for their main job, which is student outcomes. So we help them design agendas and ask good questions that superintendents can answer and should be expected to answer. It doesn't get into, you know, why'd you fire the basketball coach, but can you tell us how our third graders are doing on reading? And then the training also helps activate teamwork and advocacy, because that board is a team. They only have power when they're seated as a board, so they need to know how to work effectively as a team and work effectively as a team with their school leadership, the superintendent and his cabinet, his or her cabinet, and, of course, the community, the constituents that elected them to do this job.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about it.
How many school districts are there in North Dakota? I know you know the answer to that. How many are there?
There's 169 operating school districts in North Dakota. They range in size from 4,000 students down to 14 students.
Wow, that's the 14 students. I love it. Okay. Yep. And, I live in Maine. We have rural areas, too, but not quite like that. Okay. But it's just great. How many of them are taking this training from the state? Are they all doing it?
It's voluntary. It's completely voluntary. We like to use carrots, not sticks, so much in North Dakota. But what happened is exactly what I thought would happen. Once the first 9 school boards, those courageous school boards that signed on, really coming on our first anniversary, it was December of 2021, where we announced the first grant awards to the first courageous boards and leadership teams that stepped forward. And so with that group, we had 7 school districts, boards and leadership team go through the Be Legendary process. And we've opened 2 more rounds since then. By the end of this school year, 20% of our school boards and their leadership team will have voluntarily gone through this training. And word is spreading fast. I think at first superintendents are a little nervous about, do we really want our board to know that much? Do we really want? But
really?
What we've heard from superintendents is that this has made their job so much easier, because they've been spending their entire career busting their butt trying to get the state, you know, make the state happy or the feds happy for, you know, high math scores or high reading scores. And then they'd have to, and I'm using air quotes right now, they'd have to deal with their board. And they'd have to find out what their board wanted and have to work on those goals too. Now the goals are the same. Superintendents have said, now I don't have to work on 2 separate things. My board is aligned with making sure that students' reading scores and math scores and our science scores or our graduation rate, whatever that district's most pressing need is, that's the goals of the board, and that's what they hold their superintendent accountable for. So it's been a really, really positively received, and I'm so excited about the future of this.
I was going to ask you what was holding school boards back, and your answer a few minutes ago, you said sometimes the superintendents are leery, and that's just silly.
Yes.
Okay, because that really is silly, and that, I hate to say it because I like superintendents, but that's kind of a little power play there. Okay, your board has to be, all right, your board has to be aware of what's going on and how to do what they're supposed to do. And I have another question for you about this. Do you give them any training at all, I don't know how to say this right, but pedagogy or what's going on in the industry? You know, like a superintendent comes in and says, we need this new high-tech product, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And let's be fair, they don't know what the heck that is, okay?
Right.
And, you've got to explain it to them. But are you getting that kind of information to them as well? Is there enough attention paid to that side of it, besides the budgetary and the outcomes? And there should be, in my opinion.
Well, you know, that's where the ongoing coaching, I think that's where you've just hit on. So a 2-day training helping them set goals and helping them create a progress monitoring calendar, that's not enough. That will have some impact. But the real sweet spot, the real golden nugget is that these school districts, after the 2-day institute, they engage in ongoing coaching. They're assigned a school board coach. The school board coach helps them set their agendas. And so as they are doing this progress monitoring, they learn a lot about inputs, outputs, that lead to student outcomes. So student outcomes are their major BHAG. Keep your eye on that. But the process takes them through what you just talked about, the input of how our teachers teaching, the inputs of what materials are we using, what technology are we using.
I think it's important for them to know. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And it's really exciting.
Good.
The 15 of my colleagues convened the first part of this month to learn more about this process. So I have 15 other state chiefs that are looking at possibly bringing this to their state.
And how, and you mentioned something a few minutes ago. I just wanted to go into that. You said that they got a grant to do this. Did I hear you correctly? Or you got a grant to do this? Who got the grant?
I got the grant. So I got the grant from COVID. So we're using our ESSER funds.
Good.
So, this is what we're using a significant portion of our ESSER funds for. And so our school boards apply to be awarded a grant to assist them with the cost of this training. So total cost for training is, for one school board, is $8,700. We encourage two or three school boards to do this training together because they learn from each other. But it's not required. They can do it alone. But the state covers half of the cost, regardless of if they go alone or if they do two or three. The state will cover half the cost of this training. And then we cover the ongoing coaching as well.
That's right. Who's doing the coaching?
So we have contracted with two certified coaches. They're called Elliott McMahon, LLC. And I'll tell you the history of that. There's this man named A.J. Craybill. Yeah, A.J. Craybill was a school board president in Kansas City, Missouri, when Missouri State Education Department was threatening to shut them down. And so A.J. pretty much transformed his board and developed this idea of adult behaviors. Student outcomes won't change until adult behaviors change. And so he told Missouri State Education Agency, let me do this. Let me try and, I've got a year. Let's try and figure this out. And that's a pretty compelling reason for board members to be called to action is the story he tells me. It's like, if the state's going to come in and shut us down, we should be motivated to improve ourselves.
Right.
So
he
developed this framework while he was in while he was in Missouri. And then my colleague, Mike Morass, the Commissioner of Education in Texas, brought AJ down to Texas to develop a school governance model. So AJ developed this in Texas. I ran into him at a conference, watched a breakout session of AJ talking about school board transformation and school board governance work and just the impact. And he was singing my song. Based on my 10 years of experience as a board president, I saw us going from the lowest performing school district. Mandan was the lowest performing Class A school district in the state in our high school, bar none. Uh-huh. And in the 10 years when the board started focusing on student outcomes, when we started doing our own professional development, when we started focusing on how we were spending our money to get student outcome results, we went from the lowest performing to the highest performing in almost every category.
Wow.
Except one high school beat us. One high school beat us in science scores, and that school had a completely different demographic than we did. So
that's
right?
Not fair. Yeah, yeah. Apples to oranges.
Case,
you guys did great.
Yeah.
You guys as you were mentioning, I knew that AJ Craybill story from somewhere. Maybe you told me before, or maybe Mike did down in Texas. I can't remember. Okay, but I knew that story and I forgot about it. Thank you for that, for reminding me of that. Okay, with that guy, what that guy did. Yeah, it's really just astounding what you're doing. So, did you have to? You wanted me to ask you, okay? But I don't know how they fit in. Help me out here. The state legislature, okay? And they must be very proud of what you're doing. But how do they fit into this? Okay, what do they have to do with it? Okay, what do they think of it, and what do they have to do with it?
So first of all, they're not involved at this point, and I just say at this point because when AJ and I first that's kind of what I thought too. When AJ and
legislature.
They make fun of themselves too. They do. They're good
bureaucracy.
People.
Yeah.
So when AJ and I started plotting and planning this out in December of 2019, January and February of 2020. I concocted the plan. AJ was my thought partner and just my mentor the entire time as I'm designing this framework. He's the one that connected me with Marcia McMahon and Lori Elliott. And so they are two of his coaches that he trained, two of his first certified coaches. So he connected me with Elliott McMahon, who had their business, and said they could come in and help me. And so we did
that.
And so as I'm concocting the plan, I had to have a way to fund this. So that's when I was planning, and my intention was to go to the 2021 legislative session. We meet biennially. So I was going to go to the legislature in January of 2021 and ask them for some funding. Well, if you put the timeline together, that was the plan in February of 2020. And then the world fell apart the next month.
Yes, it did.
So as I said earlier, it put my plans for this on pause. But it removed the funding barrier. So as soon as we were able to get some state set-aside funds with COVID, I knew that I was going to stand this program up. So I didn't need to go to the legislature for any funding to start this. But it allowed me 4 years to build this proof of concept. And so for ongoing support, that's the plan for 2025 session. We're starting 2023, but I can continue without any legislative support in the 23-25 biennium. But by then, I'll come back in 25 and I'll say, you know what, this is a pretty good program. We should continue to fund it for those boards that need to be trained.
It's really an excellent program. It's better than pretty good. It's excellent and it's much needed. Okay, and the school boards, like you said, even the small school boards have to get together with others, create a class, so to speak. Okay, so that they can, you know, share the cost. It's not that much money, but they're, you know, and you probably, if you're not doing this as part of the sales pitch, it's really an investment. Okay, they're going to save that much money almost immediately. Okay, it is
absolutely
an investment. Yeah, you know, I got to ask you. Oh, good. Please go ahead. Finish.
And the investment results is student outcomes. You have graduation rates that are improved. You have subgroups that are doing better than they've ever done before.
Excellent.
You have a community. And a key piece of this is we've partnered on this entire journey with our North Dakota School Boards Association. The executive director of that School Boards Association has been with us every step of the way. Her board has been supportive of this. This isn't the state education department taking over school boards. This is the state education department finding a way that they can be helpful to our school boards association
and
their
members.
Exactly
what you're supposed to do. Yeah, it's not a power play. Okay, yeah, this is a team thing. Since you just brought up, we're talking about student outcomes. Do you have to leave in a few minutes? I'm good. Well, I'll keep you on for another 5 minutes. Is that okay?
Absolutely. That's fine.
Okay, good. I didn't want to cut into the rest of your time, okay, the rest of your day. Okay, I got to ask you about this, the NAEP scores. How'd they do in North Dakota?
So there were a couple bright spots. I'll talk about those.
Yeah, I mean, it's everywhere. Don't feel like you're not alone out there. Everybody's got the same aggravation. Yeah.
Obviously, we weren't surprised. I don't think the NAEP scores were anything that anyone in this nation was surprised about. I would say that it was one other piece of evidence proved that our students were disrupted. As we've talked
about before,
North Dakota students, we were back in classrooms. We opened up for summer school in June of 2020. When fall came around, almost, 90% of our schools were in session every day in person. Some of our larger buildings were hybrid models, but by December of 2020, we had 100% of our schools open for in-person learning 5 days a week. So we thought, I think that there was some thoughts of people in the communities that our students would be better than the rest of the nation. And in fact, it wasn't. You know, the environment, the mode of delivery of education didn't impact our students as much as the disruption in everybody's lives across this world.
Yeah,
so our scores dipped just in reading and math, fourth grade and eighth grade, just like everybody's did. But I do want to highlight this bright spot because it ties to an issue that you and I have talked about before. Our Native American fourth grade reading scores and math scores went up significantly, anyway from 4 to 7 points. And that goes to the issue that we talked about before. In investing, investing in culturally relevant materials, investing in professional development to ensure that those students of Native American descent are learning in ways that is best for them to learn. So, yeah, our NAEP scores for Native American students actually went up.
Congratulations on that. That's a huge deal because there's always been a challenge with teaching Native American kids, okay? And please don't take this as a shot on North Dakota. They're always under-resourced, and a lot of it comes from the federal governments, et cetera. There were challenges in that group. And to have their scores grow up during all this, I think that's just wonderful. And it's believe me, everybody suffered during this during the pandemic with the NAEP scores. Okay, it just it was, and knowing it, we have to correct it. That's the key. We can't wail and whine about it. We have to just correct it. And you know, I was thinking, I read this somewhere this week, and I think you're going to love this. I think you are one of three states, and I can't remember what the other two are, but I remember because I knew I was going to do this interview with you with North Dakota. Some teacher retention is fairly high. Correct me if I'm wrong. We're real concerned about this, but you guys are not having the same challenge as I think 47 other states. Okay, just talk about teacher retention, which is the big issue out there these days. Yeah.
Absolutely. So we've always had a challenge with, you know, filling all of our teacher slots because there just simply aren't that many people in North Dakota. And young people 0 to 25 are 25% of our population. So we've got 75% of the population left to do everything else that is needed to make a state keep running. So teachers, the positions have been hard to fill. But the retention piece, we did not see the exodus that other states have felt. We did not see the mass retirement, the mass resignations, people moving out of teaching. Our teachers, I hope we can always do more, and I'm working on this session to do more to help them feel more valued, more respected, you know, adequate and decent pay. But I have to believe that because they feel supported and because they know that their work is important in their communities. I just actually went to a small community last night. There was a program at 7 o'clock last night in a community called Linton, North Dakota. And they average about 10 to 15 students per grade. And they have one grade or one class per level. And, man, the community came out. The band was playing. The Chamber of Commerce had a sign that was created. Think Maine. I mean, I've said that Maine and North Dakota are very much alike. But the teachers there felt valued. They felt supported. Community members that didn't even have kids in school anymore were in that gymnasium celebrating the blue ribbon distinction that Linton Public Schools had been honored with.
Wow. Congratulations to them.
Thanks.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. Teachers walk into a gymnasium, they feel valued. And I have to say that that's more than anything that I could do at the state level. When communities make their teachers feel valued, those teachers stay.
Yeah, they're hard to replace. I hope anybody listening, if there's any community members listening, there's not much of a pipeline these days of educators. Okay, we have to retain teachers. And please respect your teachers. Okay, because if they leave, go try to find another one. I remember talking years ago, and you'll know this district, to the superintendent in Beulah, North Dakota. You know that town, Kirsten?
I sure do. It's right up the road.
Yeah, and Beulah, this gentleman, he runs a small district, and I got to tell you, okay, he was having such trouble, this is years ago, finding an English teacher. Okay, I hope he found one by now. But my point is, it's so hard to replace an educator these days with someone qualified. So love your teachers, everybody. They work hard.
Yes, that's
all right.
Mr. Travis Jordan in Beulah, North Dakota.
That's right. I would have not remembered his name, but that's who I was talking to. He's a nice guy. Okay,
guy.
A nice guy. Yeah, it's great. And you're a nice lady and a wonderfully talented one too. Okay. You're doing great work. So keep it up, Grandma. Okay, new Grandma. By the way, one last thing. Bindi is one granddaughter, but we didn't mention the other one's name. You got to do a shout out. Who's the other granddaughter?
You are a very wise man. You don't mention one without the other.
That's exactly right.
My beautiful granddaughter, Sophie, who is 19 months old, and she is just the love. She's, I mean, reinvigorated the motivation for me to do this job. She is just learning words and learning shapes and colors. She's just the light of my life.
That's sweet. And I assume neither of them will get coal in their stocking for Christmas. Would that be correct?
None. Nope.
No,
not
I
at all.
I have a feeling,
nope.
Grandma. We'll end the show so you can head over to Macy's immediately. Okay? And get to the baby.
Lots of learning toys. Lots of learning toys on my lips. All right.
I would hope
Thanks
so.
Thanks so
much, Kirsten,
Larry.
You're wonderful. Have a great holiday. Okay? Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Right. Is she wonderful or what, everybody? That's Kirsten Baszler, president of the Council of Chief State School Officers, a mover and shaker. She works in a state that, you know, it's a little bit rural up there in North Dakota. But, man, she's doing a great job. And now 10 years as their chief state school officer and now president of the Council of Chief State School Officers. And she's right. Working with school boards is a key thing. We ask people to come in there and run a school district, and we got to train them to do it. Okay. Yep. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. We'll archive at ace-ed.org, and thanks so much for listening. And I think I have the hiccups.